I'd like to welcome you to Richard Wileman's quarterly Marketing Town Hall. This is Dick Harris, and I'm Vice President for Sales and Coaching on Richard's team, and we'll be hosting today's call-in. As you know, this information-sharing discussion is open to all Wileman Center members and is specifically designed to talk about what's on your mind, your concerns, your ideas, your questions, your comments. And we've received a number of great questions for today's call over the past few weeks from professionals across the country, and we want to get to as many of these as possible in the time we have together. Richard will be joining us in a moment. I do want to reiterate that Richard will make himself available for your additional questions and comments at the conclusion of this town hall call as well. By the way, this is a live call, and we are not planning to mute the lines. However, we will do so if we experience undue background noise in the process of the call. I would now like to introduce Richard Wileman, whom I know has opening remarks for today's town hall meeting. Richard.
Good morning, Dick, and everyone joining us, or afternoon, depending on where you are on our globe today. I would first also like to mirror what Dick said, and that is we're just delighted that you've joined us today. And just some wonderful questions. It seems every quarter we get a whole different set of questions. They seem to bubble up from a lot of different venues. I know we've got questions, Dick, from all over the country. So I'm really looking forward to this opportunity to have an exchange. And let's begin and begin with our first question, Dick, and I'll respond accordingly. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Richard. And yes, we do have questions from the four quadrants of the United States, and oftentimes we get them from outside the country as well, as you know. First question is from an anonymous financial advisor. He says, there are 3,000 homes in the private community where I live. We have an online newsletter, social gatherings, and activities. Also, there's a club space that you can rent. Does this meet your criteria for a possible niche market? And he follows that up by saying, also, if you are do you need to get compliance approval from corporate if you're going to write an article or a newsletter related to a market? So the two-fold question, Richard. Yours to answer.
All right, that's great. Well, the key is, first things first, 3,000 homes in a private community, potentially, keyword, potentially, maybe a market. However, the key is, do they network and communicate with one another? My sense is that in this private community with 3,000 homes, there are typically tighter networks inside this community. And what I mean by that are things like garden clubs, bridge club, neighborhood associations, golf membership, if it happens to be a golf club, cooking clubs, where children go to school within that community, as an example. But the key is you want to target with one another and how they network with one another. So although, yes, it could possibly and potentially be a niche market with 3,000 homes in a private community, the likelihood they all network and communicate with one another is somewhat low. So I would target specific subgroups within that community so that you can get visible in those, if you will, sub-niches and have an opportunity then over time to broaden your footprint, most importantly become known and trusted to the, shall we say, homeowners in that private community. As relates to newsletters, articles are really important to run because they do give you visibility. At the same time, I don't think I've ever run into a firm that does not have some articles available from the, we're going to say, home office or corporate office that you can publish in various newsletters, journals, newspapers, etc. From our experience in coaching, and Dick, you know this because we partner an awful lot on coaching. You and I do a lot of coaching with individuals together. The reality is that most advisors are running articles, but they're not articles that make a promise. They are articles of information. They are articles that people, shall we say, can get information that is useful and that positions the advisor as a resource. Bottom line is, I would suggest to you to contact your home office and to find out what articles are available and then select from those accordingly, making sure that on the bottom of your article you have contact information for yourself, not contact information buy from me today, but contact information for additional answers to tough questions, as an example, contact, and then have your name and your phone number and, of course, your email. Dick?
Great response. Next question from a head of a team, financial services team in New England, writes, I wrote a mission statement for my team about what I think we do well as a firm. What's the best way to sell it to the team, and how should I use it in my marketing in Southern Connecticut?
Well, I will tell you from my own personal experience, selling a mission statement is not only difficult, it typically goes in the wrong direction. A mission statement should be produced by the entire team together. Yes, you can have guidelines. That's important to steer and drive the discussion. But they need to produce it with you because people support that which it is that they build. You're far better off to really, to get the mission statement going in the right direction, is to create a vision statement. As the leader of the organization, of the team, it's far more empowering and far more directional and inspiring if you have a vision statement. That really is your job, to set the course, to set the vision. This is where we're going. This is where the strategic initiative is. This is where we dream to be or hope to be as a leader of the organization. And let's build a mission statement to support that. That works well for you because, in reality, a mission statement is really an internal document. A vision statement is one where you project externally. A mission statement is internal, and they should build it with you. With that said, of course, that makes it, from a marketing perspective, a mission statement. Essentially, from a marketing perspective, it's essentially useless because it is an internal document. It's primarily what and how you do things, not what you do for others, meaning from their perspective, the consumer. So from a marketing perspective, fairly useless. But from an internal document, get everybody aligned going forward to execute the vision that you come up with, a wonderful way to get it done. And the nice thing is if they participate, candidly, you do not have to, shall we say, sell it to them. Now, to help guide you along with this for a bit, you should perhaps take on the Weilman Center, take the Leading the Marketing Initiative course, and it's class number one, which is setting the stage and tone for change. This would be very, very helpful for you to be able to, if you will, get everyone on the right, shall we say, mindset to build a mission statement and to begin to move forward and really execute brilliantly. Next question, Dick.
Thanks, Richard. Next question. I use a mailing house to send out 100 prospecting letters per month. My response rate is close to nothing, and I have never had the time to follow up on these. Any thoughts on what I should be doing better?
Well, without seeing the letter, let me comment on the strategy. And the strategy, in reality, is mailing 100 letters a month to prospect is mass marketing. And I can assure you, mass marketing is essentially dead. The reality is our business as financial advisors and professionals is to personalize and humanize every interaction. So with that said, at the same time, there is nothing wrong with sending a letter or a communication to a specific targeted group of people where you are writing to them, not at them. The reality is that you're writing to them from a perspective of this is about you as opposed to this is about me, the advisor. So once your strategy is clear that, you know what, we're going to send out a much fewer number of letters, and we're going to send them out to target constituents or prospects, and we're going to personalize and humanize those letters, then it changes everything. And the second thing is, on this point, is that call volume should dictate mail volume, not the other way around. Just the very fact that you're mailing out 100 and you don't have time to follow up, the reality is, instead of that, target a specific group and mail out, let's say, 3 or 4 letters a week, because if you can only call 3 or 4 new prospects a week, then that's all the letters you should be sending. There are millions of people waiting for advisors to follow up with them shortly. Some of them have been waiting for years. We send a letter and never follow up. And not only erode your position in the market, but from an ethical perspective, people immediately then begin to realize that, you know, these people are not keeping their word. Perhaps they do have an issue you address in your communication that they want to discuss, but that opportunity is lost if you don't follow up. So let call volume dictate mail volume. That's the right approach. And again, the most important thing is to recognize sending out 100 of anything to a group of people and hope to be able to follow up is a strategy that has been proven over and over and over again to not only be off-putting, but to be typically a waste of your financial resources in the marketplace. I'll tell you, the course they might take on that, Dick, is accelerate your growth. Take class number 11. That particular course, Accelerate Your Growth in the Affluent Marketplace, class number 11 talks about personalizing and humanizing your correspondence. Really gets you on the right path, and it helps you to determine call volume as relates to mail volume in a really unique way. So I think that might be helpful for that individual.
Absolutely. That's a perfect one to take for a response to that question. Great. Next question, Richard, and we've heard this before and with a number of clients. The question is, I get very nervous when meeting with a big prospect and never feel that I start off the conversation well. What's a good way to open a meeting, get a conversation going that will engage the prospect and put him or her at ease?
Well, you're right, Dick. It's one of the questions we hear a lot. And the reality is part of the industry has been taught incorrectly that the way to start a conversation with a prospect is to start off talking about your ability, your credibility, et cetera. The first thing you got to get straight is that they're not even going to make an appointment with you unless they think you have ability and credibility. So the reality is when you meet with these people, recognize that you are already perceived as a professional, at the very least a resource for them, to help them to discover things that perhaps they're not thinking about. So when you first sit down with a prospect, you might say something like, as you know, I work in the financial services industry, and I'm always concerned about things that people are concerned about or questions they have regarding financial issues, comma, what are three things you would like to talk about today? The reality is that way you don't have to come up with, if you will, long diatribe about what you do and not into some long seminar at the front end of the conversation. But the reality is you turn that conversation to them. So it's not about you coming up with the right things to say. The reality is giving them an opportunity to say that which it is that is right for them. So by simply putting it in a position, what are three things you'd like to talk about today, that really opens the door of opportunity for them to not only level set the conversation, but most importantly, we all know that the sale moves ahead when the prospect does the talking. As they identify these issues, it is remarkable how they chart a pathway, put you on a course where you can not only interface with them in a unique way, but most importantly, they immediately see you as a resource because you are able to answer their questions. And candidly, Dick, as you and I both know, we have advised many people that we coach, the key thing is if you're going to be meeting with a prospect for the first time, send them an email confirming, okay, we're meeting at your office, my office, whatever the case might be, on Thursday the 13th. And to help us prepare for the presentation, what are three things that you would like to discuss regarding financial issues when we meet? It's amazing. Dick, you and I could tell a lot of stories about the emails that advisors get back that from these prospects who say, here are the three things I'd like to talk about. That just level sets, gives direction to your conversation. So if you use that approach both in the pre-meeting and at the meeting, it just changes the dynamics. And so then it's not about you being nervous. It's about you being a resource.
Great, great. Next question is from a frustrated Wildman Center manager in Minneapolis. And his question is this. My team here in Minneapolis, quote unquote, is driving me nuts. I seem to continue to do all the work, and they sit back and wait for me to tell them where I need help. What am I doing wrong, Richard?
Well, that's an interesting commentary. Let me first begin by saying, back to the point that I talked about earlier, which is vision is important. You have to lay out the vision for people. You have to have them clearly have a sense of mission as relates to support of you and of the enterprise. But the only way you can get that codified, and if you will, move people moving forward, you have to really define roles, responsibilities. And what I mean by that is you need to make it very clear what the role of each individual is, what their responsibilities are. You have to give them a sense of empowerment so that they are engaged and that they feel confident in taking responsibility proactively to solve issues, to move forward on topics, to, shall we say, solve the problems of the day. So what I would suggest is, as a manager, you should schedule a half-day retreat with your team and talk it through with them, not what they're doing wrong. Keep in mind that any communication that tells people they are wrong will not be received. But what the approach I would take is the approach that, listen, we're working together as a team. We want to improve business. There is a benefit. So the reason we're meeting today is to talk about how we can better define roles and responsibilities, streamline the operation. And to do that, I want to get your input, and I want you to help me to develop this process so that you really can take a new role and a clearer role in support of me, in support of the firm. If you do that, what it does is builds consensus, it builds support, it helps people to change, it helps people to move forward. The reality is a lot of people, there are, you know, many reasons why people don't make change or why they're not supportive. One is not clearly communicated what they're supposed to do. Second, they really don't have the skill set to do it. Obviously, that's an education problem. Thirdly, oftentimes they're just not motivated to do it because they don't understand the intrinsic benefit to you as a leader and or to the organization. Occasionally, it's the fourth thing, which is a recruiting problem. And of course, then you have to change personnel. But that said, let me make this suggestion. On the Wildman Center, in the management suite, take the, under Leading Marketing Initiative, that's a course there, take class number two, which is entitled Leading Others to Change the Way They Work. That course will give you great insight on how to be able to get not only everybody on board, but most importantly, get them to process the changes and to provide the support that you need to be able to grow your enterprise. Thanks.
Great. Next question from a member in Cleveland. I want to target small business owners here in Cleveland, but unsure how to reach them. Any ideas?
Well, it's a question that, again, when we talk about small business, and it's like I talked to an advisor recently, what's your market? He says small business. Well, what kind of small business? Well, any kind, as long as it's small. Well, the reality is if you really want to be effective, as you and I both know, Dick, the key thing is that small business is a broad market category. So the real question here is what type of small business? Is it printers? Is it dry cleaners? Is it individuals in the construction industry, the transportation industry? What type of small business are you really attempting to reach? Then with that in mind, once that's crystal clear to you based on how they network and communicate, then the strategies and tactics to penetrate that market become crystal clear. You begin to recognize how to get visibility, join the association, do the things that are important for them. The reality is that as you get more visible and as you become clear on your market, then you're in a position to get warm introductions. You're in a position to, if you will, get engaged in the organization in a way that they really begin to see you as a resource. So I think to get you on this path, what I would suggest you do is take Accelerate Your Growth course on the Wildman Center, and to really identify the small business market you want to go after, the niche, the vertical, if you will, take the classes 1 through 4. It will really help you take this broad market category and break it down into niches where people network and communicate. And then to get visible, then I would encourage you to take classes 5 through 14 of that same course, because that will really give you the not only the vision, but the tactical execution to penetrate that market brilliantly. So those are my suggestions there, Dick.
Excellent.